Committee of Economic Development to order. We will skip minutes and then go to bill hearing. First bill we have on the calendar is House File 1922. Rep. Smith.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move that House File 1922 be moved to the General Register.
All right. Well, so moved. So you have the floor, and please explain what this bill does.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. This is a very simple bill. This is modifying current statute to allow the Explore Minnesota Tourism Board to include more voices than it currently does from around our state. And I brought a testifier who can go into a little bit more detail.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Lauren Bennett McGinty. I am the Executive Director of Explore Minnesota Tourism. HF 1922 adds 7 voting members to the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. It increases our current membership from 28 to 35 by adding statewide associations of craft beverage establishments, chambers of commerce in underrepresented communities, a seat for tribal nation representation, arts and culture businesses, sports businesses, outdoor recreation businesses, and tourism business owners from underrepresented communities. The additional council members will emphasize our commitment to diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility in Minnesota, and will increase collaboration and serve the broader interests of tourism across the state. We know tourism is a growing business in the state of Minnesota, and a larger council will provide additional insights into growing that economic impact and ensuring that more voices are heard to make sure that our stories that we tell and the marketing efforts that we craft are as inclusive as possible.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill? See any? Rep. Smith, any final comments?
Nope. I think that explains it well. It's a good bill.
Well, I renew the motion that House File 1922 be referred to the General Registry. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The next bill on the agenda is House File 100. Chair Stevenson, welcome to the committee. I think this is your first time to this committee, right?
It is.
I don't see any treats.
Oh. Gosh, I am such a failure. I apologize.
All right. Well, we expect next time. We're here every Wednesday, 10:30 to noon.
Noted, Madam Chair.
All right. I move House File 100 be referred to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee. Rep. Stevenson, please introduce your bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will be very brief because I see there's a long list of testifiers. I know the committee's time is short and most of the members are familiar with this bill, at least on some level. But the House File 100 is the bill to legalize adult-use cannabis in the state of Minnesota. Minnesotans are ready for this change. Our current laws are doing more harm than good, and Minnesotans deserve the freedom and respect to make their own decisions about cannabis. With that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to let the testifiers speak, address the amendments, and be available for questions at the appropriate time.
Wonderful. I want to remind testifiers that we have a full house, so we're limiting testimony to 2 minutes. The first testifier is Allison. Island Court, sorry. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Allison Valancourt, and I am a co-founder of Global Organic and Balanced Naturals. We are a women-owned cannabis company based in Northeast Minneapolis. I'm an advisory board member of the MN is Ready Coalition, and my husband and business partner is a board member of the Hemp Growers Co-op. We started our company in 2018, right after the Farm Bill passed, and have been in the hemp industry in Minnesota since its inception. Over the past 5 years, we have seen the local industry grow, innovate, educate, and help thousands of people. Since July, this growth has increased tenfold. Our products are now sold in mainstream retail, including grocery stores and co-ops, salons and spas, gyms, wellness shops, chiro PT clinics, bars and restaurants, the list goes on. Our business and our retail partners' businesses have seen incredible growth. What was once a small side passion project has grown into an operation that employs more than 30 people in a 15,000 square foot facility. Our team has doubled since July. We employ a diverse group of people from varied economic backgrounds, from entry level to managerial positions. We offer good paying jobs, benefits, professional development, and a people first community where mental health and work life balance is prioritized. Right now, Minnesota has the opportunity to create a diverse local craft industry that supports an equitable, safe, and innovative cannabis marketplace and create thousands of jobs. We know that cannabis laws are disproportionately enforced, ruin lives, and waste public resources. Minnesota has a chance to reform these outdated and harmful policies. We must center legalization on racial justice by seeking to repair past harms brought on communities of color by prohibition and ensure that people of color have opportunity and access to the growing marketplace. Decriminalizing and expunging records for marijuana convictions would allow those impacted to obtain jobs not currently available to them. Legalization would also allow new businesses to form with a focus on prioritizing those who have been harmed most by prohibition, bringing economic opportunity to impacted communities. Finally, legalization would allow the state to put manufacturing and testing standards into place that would enable customers to access safe and tested products. Prohibition only limits that access and these opportunities. Legalization benefits workers, local businesses, the state, and the people. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we have Angela Brown. And Rachel Kane is next. If you just want to come up and sit on that other chair, that would be great. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Angela Brown, or Minnesota's marijuana mom from 2014. I reside in the very rural community of Lac qui Parle County. I'm the owner of Healing Stone Therapy, taking healing to a new level for my community. A decade ago, the value of my minor son's life outweighed the law. The year and a half fight to stay out of prison for a plant that saved my son brought a wave of misunderstanding and hate from the community that I am now embracing and healing. Education is power. The nearest medical dispensary is in Wilmer. It's at least a 60-mile drive that many are unable to make due to their health. Once there, most patients are unable to afford the cost. My business is within the Madison Mercantile, a veteran-owned nonprofit ran by Grant Innovation Center, where we have daily meetings about rural development of our community. From compassionate care to organic farming, we are healing our people. With local doctors and the city on board, I plan to open a micro business that will bring employment opportunities as well as a full holistic approach to healing with cannabis as my focal point. My rural community will have safe local access to their medication. It is truly a gift to grow your own medicine. If that's not an option, then you should at least be able to hug your grower and know the earth from which your medicine came from. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Rachel Kane, and I'm the owner of Sherlock Packaging, which is located in St. Paul, Minnesota. My company was established in 2016, and currently at this time, we serve cannabis clients in 27 states and three provinces in Canada. Back in 2017, I was a founding member of the National Cannabis Industry Association Packaging and Labeling Committee. Well, my background is to help clients select child-resistant packaging to make sure that children and vulnerable individuals are protected. We do much more in other services as well as providing commercial printing and packaging services. We do not actually touch this plant. We are an ancillary company, and there is great opportunity for growth within Minnesota as small businesses such as mine come online, especially with adult use cannabis. Back in 2017, when my company first exhibited at MJ BizCon, the largest national cannabis conference out in Las Vegas, we were only one of three companies based out of Minnesota. This past year, in 2022, there was a total of 34 companies from Minnesota at that conference. The number of small businesses in Minnesota that are already active in the cannabis industry is growing annually. So this will not only affect small business opportunities directly touching cannabis, but also on that back end as well. As a small business owner, it's also the small businesses in Minnesota that will be creating jobs, especially for individuals who are facing barriers to education and employment. Small businesses such as mine and many in the cannabis space do not reject candidates just based on previous convictions or lack of education.
Can you wrap quickly, up,
yes, quickly, to what's really important and what has been proposed here in HF 100. There needs to be some changes to some of the language that is used, especially because there's a good likelihood that Minnesota will pass adult use legislation, where on the federal level, cannabis is still considered a Schedule I drug. We need to make sure that we have safe banking as we move forward. We need to make sure that we have protections in line, and I propose that we have language put in where employee safety protections could also be considered for the grants that have been put forward.
Thank you, Ms. Kane. We have a lot of testifiers. Thank you. Up next, we have Josh Wilkins-Simon, and then Adam Wagner. If you can both come up, that would be great. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed, and please make it short.
Sounds good. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of this committee. Thank you for bringing the bill forward and permitting me to speak. My name is Josh Wilkins-Simon. I'm the owner of a small business, Legacy Glassworks. I am also co-chair of the Lynn Lake Business Association. I'm here today to enthusiastically support HF 100. I want to thank Representative Stevenson and the co-authors for their tireless work on this important issue. In 2009, while I was attending college at Hamline University, I took $200 that I had saved up from working at Rainbow Foods, and I purchased a handful of locally made glass pipes and started my business selling hand-to-hand at a small music festival. After graduation, I took the dive and opened my first retail store in a tiny 400 square feet shop in Duluth. However, I was rejected for loan after loan because I did not have the typical 2 years of business operating history, and my business was not traditional in the eyes of financial institutions. With no capital, those first few years were a struggle. Legacy Glassworks is open 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, and I was personally there for every second for almost 2 years until I could afford to hire my first employee. After years of tireless work, I wanted to bring my vision of locally made pipes to the Twin Cities. Finally, I was able to find a small local bank willing to fund my second store. This store would not exist without that loan. If this bill is able to become law, many Minnesotans will be searching for startup capital. With the federal prohibition of cannabis, securing a loan from a bank will be next to impossible. The CAN Startup Grant Program, detailed in Article 3, Section 1, is absolutely critical to the success of this new marketplace. Looking at other states that have legalized cannabis, the horror stories of predatory lending practices are immense. The two core tenets of HF 100 are promoting a craft industry and prioritizing growth and recovery in communities that have experienced a disproportionate negative impact from cannabis prohibition. The only way for these to be accomplished is for the states to provide small Minnesota businesses access to capital. Without the CAN startup program, large multi-state corporations will dominate the new industry and countless lives will be ruined after folks receive private loans designed for the borrower to fail. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, and thank you for having me. My name is Adam Wagner. I founded Twin Cities THC, a cannabis cultivation and education company. On April 20th, it'll be our 6th year in operation. Our goal has been educating others on how to cultivate cannabis for their own medicinal and personal use. This business has allowed me the opportunity to go all across Minnesota discussing cannabis with individuals from all forms of life, many of whom are very interested in becoming involved with the cannabis industry here in the future. It is a no-brainer that legalization allows for many new businesses to open up their doors and thrive. It allows people like me to quit their day job, night job, and side hustles to begin chasing their passions and dreams. HF 100 allows for that specifically by having a focus on microbusiness and craft cannabis companies. People like me without large bankrolls behind them can have their dreams and passions at their fingertips. HF 100 has the ability to systematically force out multi-state operators who have no long-term interest in our state and our people. With this bill, you will see more owner-operators actually working in their business and not on some luxury boat or private golf course, as we've seen in other states. Minnesota is unique. After having been in the industry for 6 years now, I feel like I've had firsthand experience with many businesses and people behind those businesses in Minnesota. And I really have to say I'm really proud of the industry here that has formed underground. I feel like if there's ever a time for us to get this right, it is now. The people behind these businesses and the people that are interested in getting involved in the industry once it becomes live are truly amazing individuals. It must be the cold that fosters the connection between us that no other states have, because we all really look out for one another and look out for the consumers together. Come to one of our cannabis events like the Legacy THC Cup and you will see people acting as family, not as competitors. There's a place for everybody in this industry, and HF 100 allows for that and allows for the building of businesses so people can become financially independent. Thank you.
Thank you. And next we have Amber Shimba and as well as Nate Atkins. Can you please come up? Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Amber Shimpa, and I'm the CEO of Vireo Health of Minnesota, one of the two medical cannabis licensees in the state. Since we began serving the state's first patients in 2015, we've been committed not only to our patients' care, but also to our local communities as a dedicated partner working to improve lives throughout the state. We've invested $33 million in wages and benefits in the state to date, and we currently employ more than 200 Minnesotans. We have an 8-year track record of supporting labor peace, and in 2022 alone, paid more than $5.4 million to Minnesota business vendors. Despite these commitments, our company continues to operate within a very challenging landscape, and new entrants to an adult use market in Minnesota are likely to face similar problems. Accessing capital, navigating challenges presented by the tax code, and excelling in manufacturing of safe cannabis are all very difficult tasks for small businesses to handle, and that doesn't even include all the usual challenges that entrepreneurs and startup companies face. Our company is in a unique position to support the legislator's goal of fostering a vibrant cannabis industry that offers opportunities to those harmed by cannabis laws. There is a place for thoughtful mentorship here where we can help these early stage companies navigate these challenges and succeed in the industry. The first months and years of a new cannabis program are pivotal in creating the desired outcomes of quality jobs throughout the state, providing safe and accessible products to combat the illicit market, and generating meaningful tax revenues to support opportunities for reinvestment in programs and other initiatives to build a stronger future for Minnesotans. Membership programs like our Cannabis Business Accelerator program can help emerging cannabis operators navigate these industry roadblocks, and will focus on helping individuals harmed by cannabis laws prosper in the new space. As the state continues to work to determine what Minnesota's program will look like, we hope that our perspective and experience will be part of that conversation, because we believe we can build a program that benefits economic development in the state while supporting emerging diverse cannabis entrepreneurs and longstanding Minnesota business. Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Nate Atkins. I'm the political director for the Libertarian Party of Minnesota. I appreciate the courtesy of this committee allowing for our party to testify on such an important bill. While I believe that legalizing cannabis can have broad benefits for Minnesota's economy, I believe that this bill, as written, will fail Minnesotans on many fronts. It is a sad reality that our economy is increasingly cartelized, where established powerful corporations and business interests work hand in hand with our elected officials to further their power and control over the economy. As I communicate with various business owners and farmers here in Minnesota, I'm sad to say that this bill continues this reality. Consider the following regulations as outlined in this bill. Small farmers will be limited in their space to cultivate cannabis to 5,000 feet. This needs to be raised to a minimum of 3 acres. Small business owners who wish to sell cannabis and THC products will incur financial costs of over $200,000 to remain compliant with the regulations as outlined in this bill. Consider the economic impact of the insurance requirements as written in this bill. If a business sells a CBD or THC product to someone and this person were to be in an accident weeks later, the family of the person injured may be able to sue the store who sold the product. Not even liquor stores are held to this standard. When business owners have spoken to their insurance companies, they were told that they could not begin to calculate how their premiums would change. Sadly, there are many, many more examples of these sorts of onerous regulations that will punish startup and small businesses. These are the sort of onerous regulations that stifle the actions of business owners and consumers and limit the ability of our economy to grow. I would like to think that both the DFL and GOP would have the interests of small and local businesses in mind when this legislation, or when legislation such as this is crafted. Sorry.
Can you just wrap up?
I will. Okay. In closing, I would like to pose the following questions to this committee to consider when discussing House File 100. Do you want a truly free and vibrant economy for the people of Minnesota, or one of centralized control and stifling red tape? Are you working to allow for a regulatory environment where small businesses can grow and thrive? Would this legislation, if passed as written, benefit all Minnesotans' economic interests or only the powerful select few it is written for? Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Up next, we have Linda Stanton, all right, and then Sharvari Houseman. You can both come up. That would be great. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Linda Stanton. Thank you for listening to my testimony today. Why is the government getting into the drug business by commercializing marijuana, dealing a drug that is illegal at the federal level? The authors think the illicit trade in drugs can be eliminated while ignoring data from legal states, which clearly shows that the illicit market follows the legal market and expands. How will CanStart grantees compete with illegal trafficking? The Common Sense Institute reported that, quote, according to the Colorado State Patrol, Colorado is in the midst of a 10-year drug trafficking record. Through August of 2022, drug seizures by the Colorado State Patrol are up 173% for fentanyl and 75% for cannabis. Insufficient deterrence and enforcement measures are in the bill to counteract illegal sales. Forces behind commercialization, or the, quote, green rush, are outlined in the book Smokescreen by Kevin Sabe, Ph.D. One company, Altria, former Philip Morris cigarette company, is busy making marijuana deals. Others, like equity investors, beverage companies, and pharma, are investing in the marijuana industry, looking to e-cigarettes as a new marijuana delivery device. The Marijuana Policy Project, a lobbying group, works with tobacco companies to continue expanding the market for marijuana nationally, profiting off addiction. Will special interest and industry lobbyists do the rulemaking at the Office of Cannabis Management to favor the big pot industry? By commercializing cannabis, if passed, the state of Minnesota would be growing the next big tobacco. Cannabis commercialization means a multitude of harms, like we had with smoking. Tobacco 2.0. Stop this reckless bill now and vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person is Sharvari Houseman. Is that not? Am I saying it wrong? Or are they not here? Okay. Michael Ford. No. Tom Evanstadt. Evanstadt. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you very much. good morning. My name is Thomas Evanstad, E-V-E-N-S-T-A-D. And I testify today with Green Rush Enterprises, ironically. Good morning, Committee Chair Hassan, Vice Chair Hansen, Minority Lead Kosnick, and other members of the committee. The cannabis industry has grown. Well, let me start here. I was able to purchase these legally in Michigan, and the primary concern that I have with this bill or anything involving anything in society is children's safety and their health. So I have these available, albeit all the rest of the hearings is God willing, and so I urge the committee and the bill not to allow these to be purchased by adults, and then it's like wacky packs. It's not cool. And then the cannabis industry has grown exponentially over the past few years, bringing more jobs to local economies, creating tax revenue that often gets redistributed to programs that benefit local communities. There are many benefits to legalizing cannabis, and aside from the medical benefits, there are huge economic benefits. According to the Washington Post, if cannabis were legalized federally, it's estimated the industry would amass $131.8 billion. And by the way, my testimony is in written form for the committee and anybody that might want to look into it. $131 billion between 2017 and 2025. The money could be going towards programs that benefit communities, especially those disproportionately affected by the war on drugs, as we've heard other testifiers. The Denver Post reported Colorado used $7.3 million from cannabis tax revenue on homeless services and housing. If the U.S. legalized and regulated cannabis and took the same approach as Colorado and other states, the tax revenue generated would significantly impact programs across the country to help those that are less fortunate. The cannabis industry is arguably the largest, fastest growing industry to date. It's doubled in size over the past 4 years, as we just heard. I urge the committee to please pass the bill, and thank you very much for your time, and God bless.
Thank you. Our last testifier is Randy Bacchus. Bacchus, yep. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Randy Bacchus, and my wife, Heather, and I are the parents of a forever 21-year-old son who, because of cannabis-induced psychosis, took his life on July 17th of 2021. Unlike many in the room, we do not have a financial interest. What we have is a human interest, and desperately want to prevent others from going through the tragedy that we experienced. Today's weed on average is 25% THC. That's a 5 to 7-fold increase from what most of us remember. This bill has no potency caps, and the potency available today in other states is up to 99% THC. THC impairs brain development in youth, and with daily use, it will cause issues. In Colorado, 40% of the counties have opted out of having dispensaries, retail. And in California, 61% of the counties and cities have also opted out. This bill lacks potency caps. There's not an age restriction of under 25, and it doesn't allow our cities to be able to opt out at this point. If the appropriations of the bill are correct, $68 million, roughly, will be spent over a four-year period on the Cannabis Board and DEED to as it relates to this bill. This does not take into account the, for every dollar that is brought in tax revenue, $4.50 will be spent to mitigate those costs. And many believe that that will even be greater. We already have a medical cannabis program. I've heard many people over the past few weeks testify with all the issues and problems associated with that. What we really need to do is look at that program, fix that, solve that, and make that so it's more affordable to people rather than legislate and legalize cannabis. The supposed economic development will lead to further socioeconomic deterioration. This will hurt youth, families, and our communities. Please do not commercialize and normalize this damaging substance, and please do not allow this to go forward without guardrails. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a confirmation from Travis Reese that I was going to be testifying this morning.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay. My name is Ted Galati.
Just introduce yourself and
yes.
proceed.
My name is Ted Galati. I'm the owner, operator of Willis Keep Farm, Hemp Maze, Minnesota. We also have a cannabis golf course. We've been growing since 2018 on our farm. We also own Old Pine Theater, a performing arts theater where we sell our products. We also have a farm store at the Willis Keep Farm, and then we're adding another location in Hagar City, Wisconsin, where we are going to grow on 10 acres there and also have a hemp maze as well. The reason I'm here today is I did send a testimony to you all, but this bill has hemp in it over 380 times. It only lists marijuana 73 times. I'm asking you, I'm urging you to pull hemp out of this bill. It's going to destroy hemp farmers. I've got 3 points that I just want to hit on real quick. For one, Article 1, Section 20, it says that no one under the age of 21 will be able to work at a cannabis business. I'm a family farm. I've got two daughters that were in my store yesterday making pre-rolls, CBD pre-rolls that won't get anyone high. They help me cultivate. They help me process. How is that going to happen? That's not fair. We have dairy farmers. If you told them that they can't have kids on their farm working, they'd be destroyed. Second, Article 1, Section 6, this would only allow topical products to be sold, CBD products to be sold, and then everything else that's sold as far as CBD goes would have to be decided by the Office of Cannabis Management. Again, I sell CBD, I sell CBG, we sell the low-potency THC, we sell full spectrum, we sell isolate, we sell all those products. So if that happens, what happens to my business? Then in number three, I posted Article 1, Section 9, no person may import lower-potency adult edible products or hemp-derived consumer products other than hemp-derived topical products. Again, I have a farm in Wisconsin. How am I going to import that? I'm going to have to go through the Office of Cannabis Management every time I want to bring products from Hagar City across the bridge into Red Wing and into my farm. So please, I urge you, take hemp out of this bill. This is an adult-use cannabis bill. That's what it should be. Do not restrict hemp. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I believe we have amendments. The first amendment is A59. Who introduces that?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding that this bill has been through, I believe, 11 committees. Is there a fiscal note on this bill? What is the cost?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, the fiscal note is still under development, so we don't have a fiscal note on the bill. The bill does include both licensing fees and tax revenue, and it is my intention to ensure that this bill has no net cost, that it will pay for itself.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I appreciate that. Representative Stevenson, I thank you for that those comments. This has been through a number of finance and policy committees, this being a finance and policy committee, without knowing exactly what the revenue and cost are of this bill, I would move to table the bill and ask for a roll call.
Lead Kosnick, I believe this bill is actually going to another finance committee. So, but I guess we'll take the roll. For the record, we're not tabling, we're voting to table the bill, but the chair does not want us to table the bill, right? Yes. Okay. All right. I want to clear that. All right. Please take the roll.
Chair Hassan?
No.
Vice Chair Hansen, excuse. Rep Feist?
No.
Rep Feist? No. Rep Igo?
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Rep Kosnick?
Kosnick, aye.
Rep Kosnick, aye. Rep Katiza-Watun?
No.
Rep Katiza-Watun? No. Rep Perryman?
Aye.
Rep Perryman? Aye. Rep Richardson?
No.
Rep Richardson? No. Rep Schumacher?
Aye.
Rep Schumacher? Aye. Rep Smith?
No.
Rep Smith? No. Rep Wiener?
Yes.
Rep Wiener? Yes. Rep Zhang?
No.
Rep Zhang? No. With that, roll is closed.
With five ayes and six nays, the motion to table the bill does not prevail. We're going to go through the amendments. Who introduces the A59?
Madam Chair, I will move the A59 amendment. We've heard from testifiers. This bill has been widely publicized. There's a lot of people making a ton of money in other states that have done this. There's some revenues that are expected in here. I don't know why the state would need to subsidize a variety of businesses that are anticipated to gain wealth off the health of the citizenry. So what the A59 amendment does is deletes the grants for that are in Section 1 and Section 2.
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, I oppose the amendment. These grant programs that you're deleting, we actually had testimony today about how essential they are to create a well-functioning marketplace. It's the intention of the bill to try and make sure that we have a Minnesota-based marketplace that prioritizes small and local over big and national, and also repairs the damage done by prohibition. These grant programs are essential to make sure that, in particular, our social equity applicants have an ability to participate in the marketplace. So I would strongly encourage a no vote.
Discussion on the amendment?
I would encourage my members and members of the committee to vote for the amendment. On page 153, there's an open appropriation. We don't know how much these grants will be. It's not fiscally responsible to vote on things that we don't know what the cost will be to the state of Minnesota. Basically, I think we're giving kind of paybacks to people that may be advocating heavily in favor of this. If there's a profitability business model that somebody has, those are the risks that people take when they establish any kind of business, much less this particular industry. So, members, I would encourage fiscally responsible thing is until we know how much these grants are, and for the fact that I'm not sure that we actually need the grants, I would encourage members to vote for the A59 amendment.
All right. All those in favor of the A59?
And I'd like a roll call, Madam Chair.
All right. A roll call has been requested. Please take the roll.
Chair Hassan?
Chair Hassan votes no.
Hassan, no. Vice Chair Hansen, excused. Republican Lee Kosnick?
Kosnick votes aye.
Kosnick, aye. Rep Feist?
No.
Rep Feist, no. Rep Igo?
Igo, aye.
Rep Igo, aye. Rep Katiza Watun?
No.
Rep Katiza Watun, no. Rep Perryman?
Perryman, aye.
Rep Perryman, aye. Rep Richardson?
No.
Rep Richardson, no. Rep Schumacher?
Aye.
Rep Schumacher? Aye. Rep Smith?
No.
Rep Smith? No. Rep Wiener?
Yes.
Rep Wiener? Aye. Rep Zhang?
No.
Rep Zhang? No. Rep Hansen?
No.
Rep Hansen? No. Rep Klazowski, excused. With that, roll is closed.
With seven no's and five ayes, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. The next amendment is A62. Who has the A62?
I have the A62, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, you'd like to just explain your amendment?
Thank you. Yes, so the A62 amendment today is going to be focusing on the social equity applicants, predominantly in Section 15, which is on line 36.1. We heard a lot of testimony today kind of talking about how there's going to be a lot of people wanting to develop and look into this. I think we need to keep this market then as free as possible to make sure that we can have that kind of influence. My biggest concern is if we look at line 36.13 of the of the bill, Section 2 there. This bill is going to be focusing on areas that have large amounts of cannabis enforcement as something to encourage you to get a license to be able to sell and distribute. I just think that's not fair to communities, and we want to be making this as open to the market as possible and not restricting it, picking winners and losers. So I would like to be seeing this as a friendly amendment and hope we can add this to the bill today and remove this section.
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Igo, I think what is unfair is the experience that these communities have had over the last 50 years in experiencing disproportionate levels of law enforcement. I think that when you look at statistics, you will find that while cannabis use is consistent across, between white people and people of color, the arrests of people for cannabis use and sale disproportionately is not probably a strong enough word, the disparity between the amount of law enforcement activity targeting people of color versus white cannabis users. And so if you're looking for things that are unfair, I would probably start there. Part of the bill, a big reason why this bill is important to get done is try to correct for that failure on behalf of our government over the last several decades. So I strongly oppose the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment? Lead Pathnick.
Thank you. Representative Igo, I appreciate the amendment, and if we ask either the author or our research staff, I'm not familiar with any other industry where we do licensing based on race preference as social equity preference that's outlined in this bill. Do we know if we do that in any other industry?
Are you asking?
Actually, can you? No, Madam Chair.
Chair Stevenson.
To correct the record, Representative Kosnick, I don't think that it's a race preference. And if you look at the social equity, it's focused on communities that have experienced higher levels of law enforcement activity.
Do we know? Thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate that. And that the term social equity probably should have been would have been more descriptive of mine. So I apologize for that. Do we know of other industries where we base licensing with social equity? Do we do that in? Yeah, I can't think of any, but is this the first time we're doing that in terms of economic development?
Ben, do we know any industry?
Chair and members, this committee doesn't do business licensing, so I am not informed on that topic.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the answer. I'm guessing we don't, In general, I think it's important that we provide economic opportunities freely and openly across all Minnesotans. And so that's certainly what I think the intent is of the amendment. I will be supporting it, and maybe we'll follow up and see if there are other licensings that's similar in other committees.
All right. Rep. Igo, do you have something to add to this?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. To add on what Representative Kosnick was saying there, I just found it unique, Chair Stevenson, how you were correcting me for bringing race into this and then told Representative Kosnick that it had nothing to do with race. So it's interesting, a little contradiction. But the point I'll raise is, and this is the concern, so I want this removed from the bill, disproportionately large amount of cannabis enforcement. And it looks like there'll be a report in here on this. That report could reveal things that, if there's cannabis in the crime report, there could also be other things. And if we're going to be looking at putting these stores and businesses in communities that might have other crime problems under layment apart with cannabis, isn't that just putting more risk upon those business owners? So I think we should be coupling this kind of stuff with maybe some public safety reform that we can clean that stuff up too and make these communities not only safer but ready to accept other types of small businesses. So I think we're just jumping the gun on this a little bit. I would appreciate that we put this amendment on the bill and take this out for now.
All right. Madam
Chair, I'd request a roll call.
All right. A roll call has been requested. A roll call is granted.
Chair Hassan?
Hassan votes no.
Hassan, no. Vice Chair Hansen?
No.
Hansen, no. Lead Kosnick?
Yes.
Kosnick? Yes. Rep. Vice?
No.
Rep. Vice? No. Rep. Igo?
Igo, aye.
Igo? Yes. Rep. Katiza Batun?
No.
Rep. Katiza Batun? No. Rep. Perryman?
Yes.
Rep. Perryman? Yes. Rep. Richardson?
No.
Rep. Richardson? No. Rep. Schumacher?
Aye.
Rep. Schumacher? Aye. Rep. Smith?
No.
Rep. Smith? No. Rep. Wiener?
Yes.
Rep. Wiener? Yes. Rep. Zhang?
No.
Rep. Zhang? No. Rep. Kozlowski? Excused. With that, roll has closed.
With 7 nays and 5 ayes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment's not adopted. We have one more amendment, and it's the A63. Who has the A63?
I have the A63, Madam Chair.
Please explain what this does.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the bill here, it specifically discusses organized events and is says no more than 4 days. My amendment would reduce the number of days for cannabis festivals to no more than 1 day or 12 hours. My concern with this is in greater Minnesota, this bill covers the whole state. And I understand the metro and certain cities have infrastructure things in place that are needed for events like this in greater Minnesota. If we have events, we do not have the extra police staffing, medical services for large events like this. And my concern is that, you know, if we allow this 4 days in greater Minnesota, we're going to end up having concerns and problems that this will produce by having these events. So my amendment would limit it to 1 day and 12 hours as well.
All right, Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, I would oppose this amendment. I would direct Representative Weiner to line 74.27 of the current engrossment of the bill that says that in order to get an event license, you have to have proof of local approval for the cannabis event. So if there's a community that doesn't feel that it has the resources to hold a four-day event, they are well within their ability to not do that. I'd also note that, you know, whenever this is not the first time we've seen this particular amendment, and it made me think of the fact that last year in the liquor bill, we actually had a provision to allow strong beer licenses at county fairs to go longer. It used to be, the camera was 4 or 5 days, and there were some fairs in greater Minnesota that were going longer than that, and they wanted a strong beer license for the whole duration of the fair. And that was primarily driven by greater Minnesota communities that wanted to be able to serve beer over a longer period of time at a temporary event. So we did that, and now you can have a strong beer license for the entirety of your county fair if it's, you know, 7 days or whatever it is. And so it's puzzling to me that we're going to move backwards over here and move forward over there. So I would ask for a no vote.
Discussion on the amendment. Rep. Katisa Watun.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure exactly where you're district is, Representative Weiner, but my husband grew up in the Otter Tail Lakes area, and I believe that there's a country music festival called Wee Fest that happens in Detroit Lakes for multiple days every summer, and I think that it just shows that these things do happen in greater Minnesota. They can happen, and they can be done safely. I would oppose the amendment.
Pete Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, the comparison was made whether it's an outstate Minnesota, greater Minnesota, a small township, or in the metro area. And I think this amendment just provides some safety rails that I represent a suburb. A couple of the other members represent different suburbs. But we also in the metro are extremely understaffed and have low staffing levels for many of our police departments, and I think that there's that creates some concerns that I think are valid, and the amendment attempts to address those shortages concerns. There's colleges all over the place, whether it's Duluth or Northfield. I now have a couple townships. I've talked to my township supervisors that they do have concerns, where we have one sheriff in that area that patrols kind of randomly. And there is a comparison being made with liquor industry, and I don't know that that's a fair comparison. We could do a lot of things similar to the liquor industry. We don't have some of the same things that in this bill in the liquor industry, and so I often hear the comparisons. One of them was how much a local municipality can't control how much Grain Belt beer they have in somebody's house. But actually, in some municipalities, like Lakeville, you can't have a keg purchased from the city of Lakeville. And so there are inconsistencies, and so I don't know that liquor comparisons are the same. I don't know that you want to do that. There are other activities that are in the illicit market that we're not, I don't think the author would intend to legalize as well, other controlled substances, other activities. And so I think when we try to compare it to that, there are big differences. And we do have a history with alcohol and liquor. It's not always safe, and there are security concerns and health concerns with that, but I don't think the author is intending to do away with the liquor industry. But I think this is a reasonable amendment to limit how long we can do this. We can come back as a legislature and get it more refined down the road. But I would say people in many of the areas that I represent and throughout the state would have concerns with changing Wee Fest into Weed Fest.
Well, Rep. Igo, do you have a comment on this? We got a vote on this. We have two other bills, and we're running out of time. But if make it short.
Yeah, please. I'll be very brief. Just in reference to the amendment, and you know, Representative Stevenson, you had to outline line 7427. I mean, it's almost laughable that you'd put this in here for this event, but not allow communities to choose where they want a storefront. I mean, I think we're just kind of outlining here how this bill is getting rammed through at a quick speed, and we should be slowing down and making sure it doesn't contradict. And I'm not going to blame you for it. It's a 260-page bill. Doesn't even have a fiscal note yet, and here we are doing this. But you have a line in here that says you need local approval, but, you know, you don't need local approval for the storefront. Blatant problem with the bill. Local control matters. We can talk about it in every single one of your committees. Vote yes on this amendment.
Rep. Wiener, do you have something? Nope. All right. Roll call. A roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted. Please take the roll.
Chair Hassan?
No.
Hassan, no. Vice Chair Hansen?
No.
Vice Chair Hansen? No. Lead Koznick?
Koznick votes aye.
Koznick? Yes. Rep. Feist?
No.
Rep. Feist? No. Rep. Igo?
Igo aye.
Rep. Igo? Yes. Rep. Katiza Watoon?
No.
Rep. Katiza Watoon? No. Rep. Perryman?
Perryman aye.
Rep. Perryman? Aye. Rep. Richardson?
Rep. Perryman. Rep. Richardson, no.
Rep. Richardson, no. Rep. Schumacher?
Aye.
Rep. Schumacher? Yes. Rep. Smith?
No.
Rep. Smith? No. Rep. Wiener?
Yes.
Rep. Wiener? Yes. Rep. Zhang?
No.
Rep. Zhang? No. Rep. Kozlowski? Excused. With that, roll has closed.
With seven nays and five ayes, this amendment is not, motion does not fail, and the amendment is not adopted. Discussion on the bill. And I want to remind folks to make it brief because we have two other bills and are running out of time. Yep. Lead Koznick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the a little bit of discussion here. Representative Stevenson, I know you're tired of running this bill through committee stops, and you know I recognize it is a lot of work for you, and you have a constituency or that feels that this is a good idea, and there's a push to it. I'm not naive to think that there isn't an illicit market, and it isn't growing. But my efforts are to, if it's going to pass, which maybe it will, maybe it won't, is to make sure that it's right for Minnesota, and I think that's what you're trying to do as well. But I am compelled by the stories that we've heard of the dangers of it. Whether we pass this or not, the illicit market will still continue. But to figure out what is the right thing to do for the state of Minnesota and its citizens, from a policy standpoint, for every dollar that's generated, it costs the state in other surveys or studies, about $4 in other public dollars in other areas, whether it's security, education, mental health services. And so this isn't a win for Minnesota at all. Just because people want to do it, there's a lot of illegal activity that people may want to do, but there's a profit motive behind this, and obviously that's what we've heard in a lot of the testimony. I think we offered some amendments that should pause for concern, but I'm mostly compelled by the stories I've heard from some families. I have in my own family, but I'll share a story from a constituent of mine that I'm speaking for as my duty as an elected official right in my district. Her son went to school just south of us, started doing recreational marijuana, led one thing to another, ended up with a psychosis. He got caught with it. And they regret that they hired an attorney to get him out of jail and somehow off the charges. I don't know what the whole purpose was or all the events surrounding the charges. But so they thought they were being good parents, drove down to Iowa, got him off the charges, tried to get him some help, and it didn't work. He continued and continued on a path of using drugs and developed a psychosis. And it evolved into even more illicit drug use, and he's not the child that they sent off to college. We've introduced another committee's amendments, and I would still offer to the author that maybe we should, the science has shown us that maybe we should wait until age 25 where the brain is more developed and we won't be losing more kids. And so I appreciate that there's some entrepreneurs that want to continue to want to profit off this, and but there's a cost to it as a state, and that's why it's illegal at this point. That's why heroin is illegal, cocaine, other drugs. And I talked about the comparisons with alcohol. I don't think anybody's politically, the will isn't there to get rid of alcohol. I enjoy a beer, but everything's kind of in moderation. And so the comparisons aren't the same, but what we're doing here is not healthy for a lot of young people, and I'm not sure it is for a lot of adults. But I understand that the use is out there, so.
Lead Costin, can you just wrap it up? We got to vote on this bill.
Understood, Madam Chair, and I'm pretty sure you'll get the vote results that you want. But for
I have two bills on the calendar, and I have been very like generous about giving you time for the minority party to discuss this. So please
we had a variety of other critiques of the bill, not particularly germane, so we respected that, and I think we're keeping it there, but I understand your point. So I won't be supporting this bill, but we have made a good faith effort to try to make it better for Minnesotans if that's the route that we go. But I won't be supporting the bill, and I feel bad for families that have been severely affected, and we've tried our best.
Thank you. Any other members? Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Hassan, and thank you, Chair Stevenson. I'm going to be really short on this. Everybody in this crowd knows that I could talk about this for days, so I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward. I will not, I promise. But I just want to say thank you because the vast majority of Minnesotans support this. Minnesotans have spoken loud and clear. We know that we have the opportunity to build the best model for full legalization in the country, making sure we right the wrongs of the past, making sure we listen to the voices of Minnesotans. This is a well-vetted, well-regulated bill, and a well-regulated market is far safer than the prohibition that we have for kids and for everybody in Minnesota. So I'm looking forward to passing this year, and I want Minnesotans to know we've heard you loud and clear, and we are excited to get this through this year. So thank you, Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Vice Hansen. You just stole my moment. I wanna thank Chair Stevenson for his work, and Vice Chair Hansen, and Chair Gomez, and members of the community, and folks who have been organizing around this issue for many, many years. This is not an issue that just came from a constituents of yours or mine. It's an issue that many Minnesotans are demanding, are pleading with us, are requesting us to do. And it's also about equity. We know the war on drugs in the 80s and 90s was focused on black and brown folks, over patrolling communities and underserving them and locking people up for something as small as carrying, you know, a small ounce of marijuana, but then just leaving them in jail to run, and then when they come out to society, not giving them a second chance to start life all over. We know that, you know, there's a reason why our, you know, prison system and our criminal justice system is, you know, disproportionately impacts black and brown communities There's a reason for that. That's not by accident. It's by design. So thank you for doing this work. And I am, you know, hoping that the bill at the end of, you know, session is a bill that has racial equity, that has it's transformational and intentional about undoing the harm that we have done to communities of color. Thank you. And your last words on the bill?
Well, Madam Chair, I don't think I could say anything any better than you just did. So I think I'll just endorse your view, but also say thank you to you, and thank you in particular to Vice Chair Hansen, who has just been an incredible force on this bill, and really appreciate the amazing work she's been doing on it. With that, ask for a yes vote.
All right. Well, Chair, roll call? All right. Well, roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted. Chair renews that House File 100 be re-referred to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee. Please take the roll.
Chair Hassan?
Hassan votes aye.
Hassan, aye. Vice Chair Hansen?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hansen? Yes. Lee Koznick?
No.
Lee Koznick? No. Rep Feist?
Aye.
Rep Feist? Aye. Rep Igo?
No.
Rep Igo? No. Rep Katiza Watun?
Aye.
Rep Katiza Watun? Aye. Rep Perryman?
Perryman, no.
Rep Perryman? No. Rep Richardson?
Yes.
Rep Richardson? Yes. Rep Schumacher?
No.
Rep Schumacher? No. Rep Smith?
Aye.
Rep Smith? Yes. Rep Wiener?
No.
Rep Wiener? No. Rep Zhang?
Zhang?
Yes. Rep Zhang? Yes. Rep Kozlowski? Excused. With that, roll has closed.
With 7 ayes and 5 nays, the bill, the motion passes, and you are on your way to Transportation Committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we have House File 1813 with Rep. Norris. Welcome to the committee. Folks, can you keep it down? We still have another bill on the calendar. Please take your conversations to the hallways. Thank you. Rep. Norris, welcome to the committee. Chair moves that House File 1813 be referred to the Tax Committee. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Hassan and members. It's great to be back before you in the Economic Development Committee. You know, here in Minnesota, we're fortunate to have many large businesses, Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 1000 companies, especially compared to other states of our size. Yet we can't allow the success of these current Fortune 500 companies keep us from also looking ahead and cultivating the next generation of businesses that will drive Minnesota's economy in the decades to come. That's why one of the things I've really been focused on throughout my career is trying to promote entrepreneurship in our state. I helped lead the effort to create public benefit corporations to give entrepreneurs more flexibility in how they structure their businesses. I've worked with the Venn Foundation on a model that's provided over $10 million in capital to entrepreneurs. And now another tool is the Angel Tax Credit. It's an important tool for fostering entrepreneurship throughout Minnesota. It helps to attract capital to our state. It encourages investment in companies based in greater Minnesota, as well as those owned by people of color, women, and our veterans. And perhaps most importantly, it's a signal to the entrepreneurship ecosystem that the state of Minnesota supports a vibrant startup scene so that we're constantly working to cultivate the next Target, General Mills, Medtronic of the world. And with that, I'll stand for our testifiers.
All right. Well, your first testifier is Frank Chasulke, Vice President of Innovation Medical Alley. Please welcome to the committee, introduce yourself, and proceed and make your testimony very brief.
Right on. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Frank Chasulke. I'm the VP of Innovation at the Medical Alley Association. We're a not-for-profit association of 800 healthcare and health technology companies, the vast majority of which are early-stage pre-revenue startup companies that depend on investor capital to build what we hope will be the next Medtronic or other healthcare innovation company. Medical Alley was started nearly 40 years ago by Earl Bakken, the founder of Medtronic, Lee Berlin, an entrepreneur, and Governor Rudy Perpich to ensure that this community remains the best place on earth for healthcare and health innovation. the innovations that we will see tomorrow that might cure cancer, fix a broken bone, or help make healthcare more affordable and accessible are coming from entrepreneurs who spend an incredible amount of time finding capital to grow their innovation. The Angel Investor Tax Credit has been a great tool to make that process a bit easier so they can get the next innovation off the ground, focus on creating jobs, and one of my favorite things, import capital into the state of Minnesota. We like to export products and services and import cash from around the world that can fund these great innovations from Baudette, Minnesota, where there is a generic pharmaceutical company employing hundreds of people, or Blue Earth, Minnesota, where there is a diagnostic firm employing hundreds of people, and all points in between. So thank you, and I urge your support.
Thank you. And we have your next testifier is Peng Ye. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Peng Ye, and I'm a cancer survivor turned entrepreneur. About 10 years ago, diagnosed with blood cancer and founded then, after surviving, a company called Stemonix, which industrialized human brains from skin. That would not have been possible without the Angel Tax Credit. It helped kick off our $30 million round to bring this technology forward to transform drug discovery for all. I'm currently CEO of a spinout from Boston Scientific, which is also making a mask to measure disease in oneself. I think my three thoughts on startup and the Angel Tax Credit first is that it is critical for the Minnesota economy to have a strong startup ecosystem, because without it, it will not have the durability and resiliency that integrates with the Fortune 500 companies in our community. Second, the competition for startups and innovation are not just local and regional, but also global. So point three, startups need risk takers, not only for the founders, but also the investors that support those ideas. So in closing, it's a lot like turning iron into steel. Having a small percentage of a strong startup ecosystem is critical for having a durable and resilient community. Thank you.
Thank you. And then up next, we have Amy Garza. Please come forward and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, Madam Chair and the committee. Thank you for having me. I'm Amy Garza. I am the founder and CEO of a company called CoraVie Medical. And I am a huge advocate and a supporter of this Angel Tax Credit program. I founded CoraVie Medical in 2020, and I'll tell you two reasons why this is critical. Number one, this is really cultivating the innovation and economic growth for our state. So if you think about the investors that come in, this can make the difference from an investor being maybe on the fence to an investor saying, yes, I'm going to invest in your innovation and your startup, which, by the way, is driving growth for the state. Especially important in this is the fact that it supports and drives growth for women and minorities that are disproportionately not invested in the VC community. In 2022, 25% of the deal count went to women-led founders, and 17% of the deal value went to women founders. And by the way, that is over 20% below what it was the year prior. So women-led companies also, according to PitchBook, earn a higher valuation and have a better exit value compared to all male-led companies. These are really important facts that is why this is really critical, because it can make the difference between an investor saying, I'm willing to take a chance on you to drive growth for this state, and the importance of that. The second point I want to make is that Minnesota is competing on the national and international stage. We are not, this whole economy and the way our country has changed with the pandemic is huge. People can live and work anywhere and be successful. By the fact that we're competing on this national stage, I have the opportunity, I can choose to work for somebody or invest in somebody in a different state, a different country, and make my company successful. What the Angel Tax Credit does is it incentivizes Coravie Medical as a company to invest in our state. 51% of my employees need to be based in the state. 51% of my spend needs to be in the state. I have very specifically selected companies as we change vendors and sources to the state of Minnesota to ensure that I make that happen. So it's a huge value in the long-term growth for the state. Thank you, and
thank you very much. Our next testifier is Mikayla Rosad. Please introduce yourself for the record and make it brief.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mikayla Rosard. I'm here in support of the Angel Tax Credit. I am partner at Groove Investment Group, Minnesota's most active angel network. Last year, our network wrote 130 checks into 25 Minnesota startups across numerous industries. That totaled $1.5 million invested here in Minnesota. I also serve as Forge North's leader on a multi-year statewide angel activation project. The goal is to get more folks participating as angels here in our state. That includes women, black and brown investors, and others who've traditionally not been part of the investment community. I have the pleasure of seeing in action the benefits of this program. I also bear witness when the program is not fully funded, or worse yet, not operational. As an example, year to date, this year, our investment was down 63% compared to last year when the program was operational. That's a significant amount of money that folks decided not to deploy. I can say with certainty the Angel Tax Credit is top of mind for investors when they're making and thinking about angel investing. It comes down to deciding whether or not they want to start participating as angel investors. It also impacts geographically where they decide to put their dollars, as well as how much money ultimately to deploy. When investment dollars are invested here in Minnesota, innovation flourishes and our economy diversifies. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we have one more testifier. Can you make it brief as well?
I don't know if there's anybody that opposes this, Madam Chair.
What was that? Yeah. I want to make sure that we can be done at 12:30.
Thank you, members of the committee. Chair Hazan, my name is Mark Hughes, and I'm a longtime name here. I'm not a voted politician in here. I'm just a worker bee. But there's a few things I want to say. Yesterday, I reflected on this Angel Tax Credit. I was here most of the day, but spent part of the day at the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota was founded on June 30th, 1904. I'm a Carlson School graduate way back in 1982 when it was business day school. One of the things that I've learned about in our alumni lunches, there was a company called Dorn Construction. Kelly Dorn was CEO of Dorn Construction. He had become sick with cancer and turned over the reins to his niece or somebody in the family who was a woman, then became a minority. My point to this whole story is this. First of all, if you are based in Minnesota, you have the Angel Tax Credit. We want it, obviously. Second of all, what Dorn did was they wanted to explore the Denver market. They took the risk. They were scared because they'd never been to a different market like that. But if you're going to be a success here, we've all been through the coronavirus economy. Don't ever want it again. Mm-hmm. And we want this Angel Credit if we're going to move Minnesota forward. And remember, as politicians and citizens of the great state of Minnesota, we're here to serve to serve Minnesota, each and every one of us. So please vote on this Angel Tax Credit. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill? Rep. Katiso-Tun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this bill forward. I thought I had already signed on as a co-author, but guess not. So I'll remedy that. I've carried the bill the last two biennium, and we've been able to see lots of success with the funding. I think it makes a lot of sense that we expand the funding as you're doing in this proposal. We know it goes like hotcakes, and for people to
want to reinvest these dollars in the state of Minnesota and for outside dollars coming in to support the growth here locally. I think that that is tremendous. So I appreciate you carrying the torch.
Anyone else? All right, last words.
Thank you, Chair Hassan, and Representative Katitza Watun. Want to thank you for your leadership on this over the past many years, and happy to take the torch and run with it because you know, when you look at Minnesota's economy, we've been successful because we've grown our own when it comes to our businesses. And so that means it really behooves us to be constantly looking at what can we do to be cultivating our startup community so that we can build the next great Minnesota business success story. And I think the Angel Tax Credit is one of the best ways we can do that.
Thank you. Chair renews our motion that House File 1813 be referred to the Tax Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails, and your bill is on, it's on its way. All right, we have one more bill on the calendar. We can go on for 10 more minutes, or we can just push this to Friday, whatever folks want to do.
We've got some meetings.
All right. All right.
But it's up to you.
That's fine. We'll just we'll do that Friday. It's the
you want deed
it's
to go,
the deed policy bill.
Let's
yeah, let's do it. All right. Okay. Rep Hansen, let's do it. You got to do it very fast. All right. Up next, we have House File 2233. It's the deed policy bill. Vice Chair Hansen, take it away. Move
Thank
your bill
you, Chair
first.
Chair Hassan. I'd like to move that House File 2233 be re-referred to the Workforce Committee.
All right. Then explain your bill.
Thank you. I'm going to talk abnormally fast. I try to slow myself down when I'm in these committees, but today, for the sake of time, I'm going to talk quick. House File 223 is an agency bill that does four things. First, it changes the term private business to participating business in the pathway program. Private business is not defined in the statute, and the AG has weighed in on the definition of private business and has determined that it excludes businesses that may be owned by a municipality or a tribal nation, such as hospitals or tribal enterprises. So this change creates consistency between statutes and promotes greater participation in these high-demand sectors. Second, it allows tribal nations to be the direct recipients of deed state contamination cleanup grants. This was raised in tribal consultations as a requested change. Contamination cleanup grant funds are allowed for cleanup and development projects on tribal land, but are only eligible using local development authorities as the application sponsor. This bill ensures tribal nations are included in the definition of development authority and municipality. That's a hard word to say fast. Third, it moves the use of the word now on line 4.1 and 4.2 in the definition of a displaced homemaker in the Minnesota Family Resiliency Program to better support individuals seeking to reenter the workforce following divorce, death, separation, or disability of someone that they were financially dependent upon. The last and biggest change that this bill makes is to promote a more responsible use of taxpayer dollars by being more diligent about the reports that they produce and provide to the legislature. This change will allow certain reports to sunset within a reasonable amount of time. Presently, the agency spends a significant amount of time and taxpayer dollars to produce over 36 mandated reports. And while these reports can be important in certain situations, and we've had lots of conversations in various committees about the value of reports, mandating reports that are rarely referenced by legislators that are duplicative is not a good use of time, resources, nor taxpayer dollars. So this bill targets the reports that have no sunset in statute and requires the commissioner to submit an annual list of reports that will be set to expire. The list will be sent to the chair and ranking minority members of the committee, and annual reports put in place before January of 22 will sunset in January of 24. Biennium or less frequent reports enacted in January 22 will sunset in January 25. Annual reports enacted after January 22 will sunset after 3 years unless the legislation dictates other, I'm sorry, and then reports less than annually will sunset after 5 years unless the legislation dictates otherwise. I talked as fast as I could, Chair. That's what I got for you.
All right.
I'll turn it over to Deed now.
All right. Welcome, Commissioner Kevin McCannon. Please introduce yourself for the record and see if you can beat Jess Hansen to talking fast.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McKinnon, I'm the interim commissioner of Deed, and with me is Darielle Dannon, our government relations director. Thank you, Representative Hansen. I'm not sure there's anything else for me to say at this point other than the MJSP Pathways program, the Contamination Cleanup Program. Obviously, where our interest here is to be able to work directly with some of our tribal nations. of course, the addition of the word now into the displaced homemaker program is an important provision. And then, of course, the reports. We submit a variety of reports every year, including a list and inventories. Happy to have you review that. And if there are areas or reports that you don't need anymore or you'd rather not, we want to be as efficient as possible with that. We're obviously happy to continue to do reports, but certainly want them to be useful to all of you. So thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill.
Congratulations to the interim commissioner.
All right.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. All right. Final word to the bill.
That's it. Just seeking to re-refer House File 2233 to the Workforce Committee. Thanks.
All right. Well, Chair Rep Hansen renews her motion that House File 2233 be re-referred to the Workforce Development Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails, and your bill is going on its way to Workforce Development.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Would you like us to keep the minutes in our folder since we didn't get to them?
Let's actually act on that right now.
Madam Chair, I would move approval of the minutes from March 1st.
All right. Discussion on the minutes on the March 1st. All those in favor of adopting the minutes of March 1st, say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you, everyone. Our next meeting is Friday, March 10, 8:30 in room 200. Thank you, and the committee is adjourned.